Oh, we have a question down here.
Thank you, Chief Minister. My name's Jenny Horsfield. I'm Chair of Moth Minders of Tuggeranong Homestead. And my question is basically about the lake that we're looking at there. We've had a lot of concerns over the past year about the health risks from blue-green algae in the lake, and it's a continuing problem with continuing closures. I believe it's closed at the moment. And Dr. Ian Lawrence has made a very comprehensive study of the proposals for wetlands in the valley to help mitigate that. And we have been trying for years to get a wetlands at Tuggeranong Homestead, and we'd just like to know what kind of commitment the government feels they can make to developments of that kind in the valley, both for the sake of recreational pursuits on the lake, for the health of residents, and for the long-term environmental benefits of a sort of better water structure than concrete channels.
Thank you for the question, and I in fact was talking with Mick Gentleman about this subject just today. We've made some commitments in the parliamentary agreement around urban ponds. We're also looking at how they've rolled out across Canberra, and I think there's been some views expressed about their dual use. I think it's accepted that they are wonderful recreation areas and they do their job for water quality. There's probably questions about whether they should be built with the capacity to water sports grounds around them, whether that's as important as the other elements they provide. We have committed through the parliamentary agreement, we've reached in principle agreement with the Commonwealth over access to $85 million, which essentially is to look at our waterways and our lakes within the ACT and their impact, particularly downstream, the water that goes into the Murrumbidgee, and Tuggeranong would be included as part of that. We probably have a little bit of convincing of the Commonwealth to do about how that money is applied. So they've reached in principle agreement with it. That gives us capital funding to look at all of our lakes and waterways. We want to prioritise the lakes and how we improve water quality in the lakes. The Commonwealth probably isn't as interested in the water quality within the lakes as we are as a jurisdiction that lives here. They're very interested in the quality of the water that leaves our lakes and heads into the rivers downstream and ultimately into the basin. So that work is being done at the moment, and the commitments we've made are outlined in the parliamentary agreement. I think it's fair to say the government sees a lot of merits in those wetlands in urban areas. They're proving very popular in the areas where they are, where they've just been completed. So yes, and with mixed advocacy, it's something that we're working on. I can't give you anything more than that because we have to get agreement from the Commonwealth on how that the business plan for that $85 million rolls out, and we're yet to do that. But as soon as we do, and rest assured that Tuggeranong is very much a part of that.
We have another question.
Eric Bassett, I'm a cancer patient, also a rope player. When you plan on putting our rates up, and if you should do, we could start seeing value for money as far as our rates are concerned, especially roads. Roads, and I mean, get our bins emptied every week, books do, but don't see any value for money in our rates, especially with the overpass forming part as it is. And just value for money.
Okay. Well, perhaps if I deal with the overpass issue first, it received some chronicle attention in the week. Look, that was the fault of the contractor and it's been fixed. It was the type of paint that was used and it's been completed at no cost to the government.
It shouldn't happen though, should it?
Well, perhaps.
You pay $6 million for something.
Well, all I'm telling you is that the advice I have, if there's a mistake made by the contractor, perhaps if you want to lay fault, you find the fault that the government didn't identify the paint problem
just
before it went on.
Just let me check
this. But the paint went on. There's a fault with it, it's being fixed at no cost to the government, and I think that's important. That's part of our contractual arrangements when we enter into procurement with private contractors to deliver a product. in relation to rates, rates cover a whole range of services that the government provides. It's not just your bins and your roads, although I would say that we do a pretty good job of that. Yes, it's a big challenge meeting all the road demands that we've got across the city. We've got new areas, we've got old areas. But I think on any measure, and have a look at some of the benchmarking that's done, you'll see that the ACT government service is, you know, as good as, if not better, than some of the other areas it's benchmarked against. So I can see you've shaken your head quite a bit tonight, so I can see you don't agree with me. But if I could just, in relation to rates, we have implemented changes to the rate system. We are seeking to abolish stamp duty. As part of abolishing stamp duty, we need to shift the money that was being paid for or raised through stamp duty into another area of government revenue collection. And that's what we're doing, and we went to the election and we're clear on that. That will mean, as we are reducing the stamp duty collected, so you pay less stamp duty when you buy a house, that we are seeking to increase that in a fair way through the changes that we've made to the tax system. Because frankly, I think you'd find it hard to find anyone that would agree that 9% of people, I think it is, who choose to move every year should pay a third of the revenue base. Or actually, I think it's close to a quarter of the revenue base of the ACT government, and that's what's been happening. So, you know, I think I'm happy to talk to you at length about tax reform and some of the changes. We'll be making more changes in this next budget.
Chief Minister, good evening, Chief Minister. My name is Carl Petrie. 8 years ago, I paid $24,000 in stamp duty on my house, and now it appears I'm going to pay again over a 20-year period. Now, is this double taxation?
Well, that's why we're doing it over 20 years. I mean, I agree that, I mean, if you brought these changes in, and I think on average, if you look at some of the modelling that was being done, people move house, I think it's once every 7 years from memory. So what we looked at when we implemented tax reform, and we know that a lot of people don't move because of stamp duty, so it has other impacts on the city. For example, people living in large houses that actually want to downsize but won't do it because they're paying stamp duty. So when we looked at how we implement tax reform, we did it over a staged way. In fact, I think the tax reform report that was handed down recommended doing it over 10 years. We looked at some of the impacts that would have on households, and we made the decision to do it over 20 years, precisely to smooth out the situation where people felt like they were paying twice. I think, you know, by the time we actually get rid of stamp duty in 20 years, it'll be 28 years from the point that you would have paid $24,000 in stamp duty. So what people saw in the first year was probably larger changes than they'll see in future, and that was implementing the marginal tax rates as part of that as well. So what people paid based on the value of the block. So we very much, it follows like income tax. Those who are on higher value blocks should pay a little bit more through that ratings factor. And so we implemented those changes as well as the other changes of reducing stamp duty. So we are mindful of, you know, no one's going to say that we didn't notice, you know, one, the campaign that was run during the election campaign around tax reform, all the concerns that people raised with us through that, and we are mindful of that as we make the next changes to tax reform. But we also think it's important to get rid of stamp duty, and we've got a lot of support for that as well. You know, we do. People who are talking to us about the fact that they are delaying decisions because they want to see stamp duty come down, or people saying that they are now actually going to move and reduce the size of the house they live in because they will be paying this stamp duty. So we're going to go carefully, and we're listening to what people are saying about it.
Thank you for the opportunity, Chief Minister. My name's Gordon Hollins. I live here at Greenway. I think Canberrans enjoy one of the highest qualities of life by most measures, comparatively, across Australian capital cities. However, I'd be interested to hear from you tonight what jurisdictional and governance barriers your government faces in regards to taking the ACT and the Canberra community to a greater place other than what's on the hill, so to speak. And I use Hobart as an example. Hobart is a city of 80,000 people. We are a city of 350,000-400,000 in that region. So what jurisdictional and governance barriers is your government facing that prevents the ACT being in this more, greater role in the Australian community?
Well, there's certainly some constraints. Perhaps, I mean, I'm not sure if you're talking about the issues of statehood or the prominence that we have in the region. I mean, there certainly are some issues in terms of the fact that we're a territory. We've been established by the Commonwealth to be the seat of the federal parliament, and so in that way, on one level, that defines us as a city. On the other hand, it presents us with some great opportunities, and I think, and I talked about this at length through the election, one of our great opportunities going forward is to become the capital of a much greater region. And I don't think we have focused on that enough. I think at times, particularly since self-government, it's been seen as, you know, all New South Wales do is come and take all our services and then head back over the border and they don't pay for them, rather than seeing the opportunities that presents as being a city of 600,000 or 650,000 and the potential of growth, because southeast New South Wales is one of the fastest growing regions in the country. So we've established, Barry O'Farrell and I have established a New South Wales ACT Memorandum of Understanding about really to facilitate cross-border relationships. I'm trying to make some moves in the area of health, where we're using Queanbeyan Hospital to deliver some health services to prove to people that you can actually, you know, people don't see that line on the map in the morning when 20,000 people come across the border. And it gives us the advantage of being a much larger city, so we actually get services here that we wouldn't get if we were an island on our own. So I think, you know, there are some challenges for us as a city, and particularly in how perhaps other parts of Australia perceive us or perceive what our role is to be. I think that's where the centenary gives us a good opportunity. I think if we can really move forward on this regional framework, and so I've joined the group that represents all the councils around the ACT, so I get to go to their meetings and talk with them. And, you know, if we could actually map out a 10-year plan for having collaboration with the councils, I mean, we all buy waste services, we all pay for our municipal roads, we're doing it in little tiny bits for this region. If we could actually get that coordinated, I think there could be a lot of positives for the city. So I think it's incremental. And as we head into our second century, and I'm sure whoever the Chief Minister is standing here in 100 years' time, the role of CAM will be very different and enhanced on what it is today, I hope so.
Chief Minister Ross McConnell. Tonight, just an example, I work in the city and I went to a meeting at CSIRO, and then I went and had time, so I drove around the Arboretum and was really impressed with it, I must say, and then drove down here. One of the issues that really concerns a lot of people in Tuggeranong is still this pressure for public transport when there's only two express buses from anywhere to get into town and back each morning and afternoon. And so that opportunity that I had tonight wouldn't have been there if I'd been going by public transport. So the real question is not public transport, the question is parking. And we're really concerned about the lack of, or the amount of parking in the city that's being turned into buildings. And just the pressure to find parking and the half hour it takes to drive around and find something. Is there anything that's going to remediate that in the near future? Because parking is a fact for people from Tuggeranong, not public transport.
Yeah, look, I travel on public transport quite a lot just to test the public transport system out. I find the inter-town transport actually pretty good. If you want to go from interchange to interchange, you can get from Gungahla to Tuggeranong fairly quickly these days. The rapid service works pretty efficiently. I think the pressure on public transport comes from the suburban connections, and that they aren't always convenient for people. So then we've got to look at, one, how you service the suburbs. You know, again, running action in Canberra. There, you won't find too many cities this size that is as dispersed as we are, where you can travel really for 17 kilometres without picking up a passenger. You know, that certainly impacts on the service you can run at the cost that it provides. But I think for us, it really has to be about more park and rides. Like, we do have to start using public transport more than we're using it now, and we have to make it easy for people to use it. Parking is part of the solution, but it's not going to be the only thing. We have to build up the public transport capacity. The parks in Civic, on any independent analysis, will tell you that there is more parks in Civic than there are demand. The issue is cost of parking. So, you know, the Canberra Centre, for example, on any working day will be half empty. It gets busy on the weekends at particular times. So the actual parking spaces are there, but the cost of it people find restrictive, I think, or prohibitive, particularly for workers that are coming in at odd times of the day. Look, I'm not going to sit here and say that it's going to get easier to park in the city. I think as we build up our public transport system, what you look at in other cities, in particularly in the town centres, is that actually you have to balance the parking availability with the resources that you put into public transport against the demand for development within the city. So, you know, I'm not sure there's an easy answer to your question, but as the city develops, I think we're going to have to keep our eye on the government-owned car parking and then look at how we can make it easier for people when they're coming into the town and leaving the town to actually use the public transport system. And some of that has to be the park and rides, and there has to be more of them. I'm convinced that, you know, people will use the public transport system if we make it easy for them. But there's a lot more to be done and more resources that have to go into the network.
Chief Minister, according to our program, we're due to break for coffee, but are you happy to take more questions? Because
yes,
we do have some more questions.
Learning Chief Minister, Bill Hines, 33-year resident of Moniassa, at the same address. The ACT.
You haven't paid stamp duty for all.
It's leading the way. The ACT Planning and Development Act 2007 now has two ministers responsible for its implementation, hence two directorates, Environment Sustainable Development and Economic Development Directorate. Recent media and ACT government notices indicate that the Woden Town Centre is now being redeveloped by two directorates, EDD taking responsibility for the public realm, including a relocated bus interchange, and ESDD commencing a review of the Woden Master Plan soon. Does this redevelopment include the enhanced Woden Community Health Centre, an important component of South Canberra-Woden-Tuggeranong infrastructure, as a whole of government project? And if so, when is this centre scheduled for construction?
Yes, that will be. There's some feasibility money, I think, that we've put for the looking at the relocation and of the Woden Community Services currently, if we're talking about the same service, yeah. So that would be part of the planning work that's done around Woden. It's not necessary. We've made a decision to support the work done to look at redesigning and perhaps potential sites for a new community service. I think everyone, I used to work there years ago. I worked there for probably 8 years, so I know it really well, and I know its constraints really well. So everyone accepts that it's time to, that building has reached the end of its useful purpose. Now it's about finding an appropriate location and also looking at co-location opportunities for other services that are in Woden to go into a new building. So that will be done. I think that's being done by Community Services, is it?
Mm.
Joy? Yeah, so that work's being done by Community Services, but it will be mindful of the other planning work. I mean, you know, not always one government, but in this is where you require all your directorates to talk to each other about the work that they're undertaking.
Can we be assured that whole of government approach will persist, because the evidence to date suggests that they tend to go in different directions, and that frustrates us residents?
Yes. Yes.
Because we don't, we see, and I've been involved here and there, and I can see it just disappearing. And it's a couple of years' work, and it's just all doesn't happen. And I can understand Westfield pushing. Myers pushing Westfield to get on the front.
Mm.
But I see the enhanced Woden Health Centre just doesn't appear on any of the community health centre.
Okay, are we talking the Phillip Health Centre? Yes, the actual Phillip, right. I was talking about something different then. I was talking about the community centre, which we are doing some work over. The enhanced, the Phillip Health Centre, we haven't taken any decisions on at this point in time. We're doing Tuggeranong, Gungahlin and Belconnen community health centres. Gungahlin's open, Tuggeranong refurbishment underway, and Belconnen will be open, I think, towards the end of this year. The issue of Phillip, we are considering as part of the hospital redevelopment, because some of the services that are currently offered in the hospital we would be looking at putting into that health, at the new health centre. So I can assure you that all directorates are working together. I would say that sometimes the directorates don't agree, like Economic Development Directorate has a particular focus, that's to maximise the economic opportunity of the city. The planners, you know, don't always think with an economic, you know, opportunity as part of, at first and foremost, and nor should they. So when you're talking about Woden, yes, the planners will be doing the master plan. Economic Development is working with Westfield about opportunities on the bus interchange, and I think there's agreement that the bus interchange, we need a new bus interchange in Woden, and the Belconnen bus interchange has had some design shortfalls, but overall it's gone very well. So we're taking what we've learned from there to the table, but I think they do have different responsibilities, so even though they talk to each other, they might not agree, and that's important for government as well. You don't want all your directorates just agreeing for the sake of looking like they're working together. You actually need the planners to say, you know what Economic Development Directorate's suggesting is not the right planning outcome. It might give you the most dollars in return or cost you less, but we have some planning reasons why that shouldn't happen. And so, you know, there are reasons why it might look like they're not working together, but I think the opportunity to disagree is an important one. But yes, they are all working. I can talk to you in a couple of things.
We had Eric and then Glenys. And there's another lady.
And then Don's down here and he's been waiting forever. So I'm going to go to Don next.
Okay, Eric, Don.
Eric Fraser, Chief Minister. Just a resident of Penarthur. And having moved back from Queensland a few years ago and bought a house and then moved again within 3 years, the ACT Treasury is very happy with me, I have to say. Yeah. That's not my question though. As you probably know, Tuggeranong Community Council has been opposing the trial-y residential development for at least 10 years now. And of course, now that the New South Wales Planning Minister has approved the rezoning of that area, it looks like that residential area is going to proceed. The ACT government has also been opposing that development for quite a long time. But as I understand it, you are now thinking that the ACT government is now going to have to cooperate with Queensland, with Queanbeyan City Council, in terms of providing whatever resources, infrastructure, changes needed for that development to proceed. This, I mean, we're of course concerned about in the future, aircraft noise is going to mean flight paths will change, and all different parts of Canberra, of course, would then have an aircraft noise problem we don't currently have. Certainly, we could see that it makes sense for that part of Tralee, the industrial, quite industrial area, immediately on the other side of Hume industrial area. And it's not as if Queanbeyan Council doesn't have a lot of other areas for residential development, although Googong. So, really, why should the ACT government be spending our money to help with the development that we don't want to happen?
Yeah, that's a question I've asked officials as well. Look, on the one hand, we are a region and nothing can change that. We're going to have people that build, New South Wales governments that allow building around the outskirts of Canberra. That will happen. How we then work with the New South Wales government around that to not put the burden entirely onto the ACT taxpayer is another question. Look, I've met with Barry O'Farrell about it. I've recently written to him post the Hazards announcement. I've met with the airport over it. I've met with Albanese over it, all over, all since the announcement around Tralee, to see what particularly the federal government's view of it is. I understand there are some recent environmental issues that are being considered as part of the approval stage of Tralee. I don't know whether that's actually going to stop or delay the Tralee development. I've also asked for advice from my officials and around the cost of providing infrastructure to link Tralee up to the ACT, essentially. I think it would be quite a difficult argument to run to when we don't have jurisdiction over the planning. So the planning documents have all been signed off. There's going to be development. I'm not sure how you would run saying I'm not going to connect them to our sewerage system, because that's essentially what we would have to do. The ACT government would have to say, well, you can build all that you like, but whatever waste you generate, whatever your requirements are, that can stay on that side of the border.
Sounds good to me.
There are also some opportunities for New South Wales and the developer to contribute to those costs. So that piece of work is underway. I don't have a figure on what that will be. But, you know, we have resisted it to the... We have followed everything we could have done to stop that. I cannot believe that the New South Wales Planning Department sent a brief to their minister recommending approval of Tralee. It just does not make any sense under any of their laws. So I think it's been an executive decision at the government level. So a political decision, essentially, and there's nothing we can do to stop that. There's no appeals process. We can't do anything. So now it's really, what are the next steps? What is the timetable? What is the cost of the infrastructure and who pays for it? So I haven't accepted that we pay for it yet.
We'll be watching.
Yes, I'm sure.
Thank you, Chief Minister. Don Thomas is my name. I've been a resident in Canberra for nearly 52 years now, and a resident in Tamarong area for 13 years. So I speak with a measure of longevity and confidence. The results of the recent election, as far as the electorate of Brindabella is concerned, must have been very alarming and disappointing to you and your government. And it came as a surprise to me, as a result of which I conducted a few unofficial straw polls. And it's quite obvious that the people who responded were very disappointed with the lack of perceived perception that the government was that far away and that more interested in the continuing development, as John Stanhope would have had it, in the civic, in Gungahlin, and now more recently in Malolo, as a result of which we've fallen off the map in Tamarong. Now, can we have your assurance that under your administration this will not be the reality or the perception? And can we also seek your assurance that insofar as it's possible that an adequate amount of money, having regard to the fact that we pay our taxes and our rates, will be expended in Tangerong and not just placed in other areas which are too remote to mention?
I think one of the most... one of the things that struck me most about the election outcome was the divided nature of the city. And governments have to learn and look at that, no doubt. And I don't think it's an easy answer to say that every part of Canberra gets the same level of infrastructure. I don't think that's what happened when Tuggeranong was being built to other areas. And it's the same now. We have a limited capital budget. Malonglo is the new development front. Gungahlin, resources that have been pushing into Gungahlin for roads, you know, health centres, schools, recreation facilities will move to Malonglo in the next few years, and I'm sure the residents of Gungahlin will feel, well, you know, some of that attention that we had has now moved to another area. And that's part of the challenge of building new development fronts, that you have to go in and build the services. You know, I'm not also going to stand here and pretend that we didn't hear what the Brindabella residents said to us. And we we made a number of commitments in the election about that. And as a government and the leader of the government, you have to learn from these things. And you have to pay attention to them. Or at your own peril.
No, we've got to take it.
You know, we've got a new health centre coming here. We've got major upgrades to the schools here. We've got a new CIT learning centre that's underway. We've got the second stage of the arts centre. We've got commitments around Ashley Drive. You know, we've made, as part of our commitments, and that's just election commitments. We've got a range of other just, you know, business of government commitments that will be rolled out in Tuggeranong, as they will be in other parts of Canberra as well. But, you know, the budget is under pressure as well, so we just have to manage competing challenges. But that's
from Tuggeranong, Tuggeranong Lake Carers and the Southern Lakes Education Group. Something you said earlier concerned me a bit. You talked about we could get two wetlands. By the way, Ian Lawrence says we need to have six wetlands to even make a difference to the Gilbert Algae, of course, we're the most closed lake, but we're still closed. But you implied the money was almost dependent upon the money coming from the Murray-Darling, and that's a bit concerning, because I think it needs to be done irrespective, and isn't the parliamentary agreement it's going to be done? You implied it was going to be dependent upon if we get this money. Now, there's been wetlands in other parts, northern part of Canberra, they weren't dependent on this money. Why can't we get guaranteed wetlands here, irrespective of that? And the other thing is too, I'm a bit concerned, when we had that bridge that went in that we were just talking about earlier, it was an election promise from the last election, it came through just before this election. We really don't want to have to wait to, you know, 2016 before the next election to get the wetlands. We really should be trying to get them in as soon as possible. Because the local residents are really concerned about the lake closures and smells, etc.
Look, the wetlands program, certainly the ones that have just been completed in the inner north, have taken around just over 2 years, I think, to construct. I mean, it depends on the size of the ponds that are being put in, but they are big infrastructure projects, so there does take some time to roll them out. Our preference is we use that money because our budget is under pressure. We don't have a large amount. We've got hospitals to build, schools to build, so we've got a range of priorities. We have agreement in principle to use $85 million from the Commonwealth. They've agreed that that money should stay in the ACT to improve our waterways. So we've got that in principle agreement. We now need to put in a business case about how that money is to be allocated. But yes, we do have commitments in the parliamentary agreement. So my preference is we use that money.
But it will be done.
Yes, it's contained in the agreement. My preference is we go through that business case because that money is coming from the Commonwealth. But we are aware of the commitments we've made in addition to that.
Final speech.